Association of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. In order to carry out the policy of this lodge, this local branch of ULT has a program consisting of 2 weekly meetings and a library, which is open on Wednesdays from 5:30 until 7:30. Now, each Sunday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, there is either a talk, a forum, or a panel presented. And these presentations are based on a theme of the month. And the theme for this month is the path of spiritual evolution. The title of the talk for today is Hatha and Raja Yoga. And next Sunday morning, there will be a forum entitled The Power of Faith and Will. And following these presentations is always a time for questions and discussions. Now, on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 until 9 o'clock, there is always a class in the Ocean of Theosophy by William Hugh Judge. The class began last week, the study of reincarnation, and it will continue that discussion this coming Wednesdays. Now, on Wednesdays, as we said before, the library is open from 5:30 until 7:30. It carries a straight line of Theosophical literature consisting of books, pamphlets, and magazines, all comprising the original writings of the founders of the Theosophical movement. Usually during library hours, there's always a person available to lend assistance. And also during library hours, you may purchase any literature you might like just outside of this meeting room. All activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, of service, and money. And all are most welcome to participate. The reading for today has been taken, selected from the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Those who have spiritual discrimination call him wise whose undertakings are all free from desire, for his actions are consumed in the fire of knowledge. He abandoneth the desire to see a reward for his actions, is free, contented, and upon nothing dependent. And although engaged in action, he really doeth nothing. He is not solicitous of results, with mind and body subdued, and being above enjoyment from objects. Doing with the body alone the acts of the body, he does not subject himself to rebirth. He is contented with whatever he receives fortuitously, is free from the influence of the cares of offices and from envy, the same in success and failure. Even though he act, he is not bound by the bonds of action. All actions of such a man who is free from self-interest, who is devoted with heart set upon spiritual knowledge, and whose acts are sacrifices for the sake of the Supreme, are dissolved and left without effect on him. The Supreme Spirit is the act of offering. The Supreme Spirit is the sacrificial butter offered in the fire, which is the Supreme Spirit. And unto the Supreme Spirit goeth he who maketh the Supreme Spirit the object of his meditation in performing his actions. The subject of the talk for this morning is Hatha and Raja Yoga.
We chose that reading for today because our topic for the overall umbrella topic for the month is the path to spiritual evolution. And we think that that reading epitomizes what that person who is evolving and has evolved, if we're talking about masters and adepts, that is something we can strive for. But the topic for today, though, is Hatha and Raja Yoga. And one would say, what does yoga have to do with spiritual evolution? What is evolving, then, when we are talking about evolution and yoga? So we'll have a discussion, then, in the beginning of our talk about what is spiritual evolution, so that we have a basis to go on when we're speaking of Hatha and Raja Yoga. So what is it that is evolving? This past Wednesday class, that was the topic, who or what reincarnates. So we can look at that as being whatever it is that reincarnates, that is what will be part of what is evolving. And we learned in that class of the seven principles in man, the higher triad being Atma or spirit, Buddhi, spiritual soul, Manas or mind. And then we have the lower four of body. We have prana or the life energy, astral or the design body, and then we have kama, which is the passions and desires. And the upper three of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, those are the three that are eternal, that will come back life after life. And they shed off the lower four with each lifetime, and they get a new set with each reincarnation. That's a very quick description of how that works. And the human kingdom is the only self-conscious one of all the kingdoms. Now, the idea of spiritual evolution just may be new for some people, because most people, if they do think about reincarnation, they're looking at the physical body that reincarnates. So when we're talking about evolving, though, it's important to know that Buddhi and Atma are. I mean, they don't evolve. But when we're looking at the mind, mind is dual, then, in the sense that it's not two separate entities. It's one with a a portion that may function from the lower, and then there might be, you know, the higher aspect, the higher acting of mind. So when we're talking about spiritual evolution, then we're actually talking about trying to mesh mind into one cohesive property then, or principle, so that it is consistently functioning from the higher aspect, functioning towards Buddhi, being able to access that spiritual soul that Buddhi is. Unfortunately, though, currently in this stage of evolution, we are functioning mostly from that lower aspect with little dashes, little sparks of the higher coming through. So what we're trying to do, as we said, was to try to get more of those flashes in than not. And many times it depends on the day that we're having. You know, if we have a lot of distractions, many times we do function closer to the passions and desires. Now, we found a really wonderful quote, and we apologize because we think it's Mr. Judge, but we don't know where it's from. The theosophical life is one of sanctified common sense, the doing of whatever is done from the spiritual or impersonal point of view. The beginning of this life is the effort to find and apply universal laws to daily tasks. For yoga, or union with spirit, is skill in the performance of action. So when we're thinking of spiritual evolution, then, in reference to Hatha and Raja Yoga, as we said, we're looking as to how we can get our minds to function more consistently towards the higher nature. The soul is superior to mind, but it needs mind to connect itself with the lower principles, because that is functioning on this level now, where we learn the lessons that we have to learn. So we have to have mind as the connection between the higher and the body and its principles. So this is what we'll be discussing today, raising up our lower mind using Hatha or Raja Yoga, which is more appropriate. Yoga is the practice of meditation as a means of leading to spiritual liberation. Hatha yoga is a form of yoga exercise, and it emphasizes certain specific postures in combination with controlled breathing. This is the type of yoga that is predominantly practiced here in the West. And Mr. Judge states in his preface to Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, and we just wanted everybody to know that this is the little book that is chock full of all wonderful things, and we have a couple copies on the book table out there if anyone's interested in looking at it after the meeting. In Hatha Yoga, he says, in Hatha Yoga practice, the result is psychic development at the delay or expense of the spiritual nature. Psychic being that which lies between purely spiritual and matter. So we're talking about mind here. So we see how the mind principle is so crucial to the development of our spiritual nature. In regards to Hatha Yoga, what it is, what it espouses, Hatha Yoga works through the body. it involves the body in different positions and relationships. And they want to use these different body positions to bring about changes in the mind. Rather than trying to affect the mind directly, which is far more difficult. So it's almost like they're looking for the easy way to get to this spiritual enlightenment. Hatha yoga works from the tangible, familiar arena of the physical body. It is trying to use the body to transform the mind. And it is these physical benefits that make it so popular because as well, I mean, doctors all over, if somebody complains of being stiff or sore, they say, go take a yoga class. Because it does function on the body and it does help to make one limber. But these incidental physical benefits are connected to the intended psychological benefits. And they think that rigidity and inflexibility in the body and mind restrict us to limited range of responses to life. So they're looking at if the body is stiff and doesn't function well, then the mind will be the same way, so that if they can limber up the body, that the mind will be affected as well. Now they use a number of different processes in doing this, and they're called alignment or asana, vinyasa, connectivity. Now I may not be pronouncing these right. Banda or Banda, energetics, pranayama, breathing, and drushti, attentiveness. And they're used to break down all patterns of emotional or spiritual holding, which would cause a limitation in one's life. This structure is dismantled, meaning the stiffness in the body and mind, the deeper, profoundly rewarding aspects of their being is revealed. Hatha yoga is intended as a spiritual practice, and its goal is for deep self-acceptance. But they work on every level, physical, emotional, psychological, social, cultural, and spiritual. So those are the issues with Hatha yoga then. Is because that they do want to function, they do want to affect the spiritual nature of man. But they don't realize that if there is a spiritual change in somebody by doing the Hatha yoga, it is only for this present life. Whereas Raja yoga, any psychic or spiritual changes that go on will be carried through from life to life. Whereas with Hatha yoga, you get it now. When you come back, you got to start all over again. One of the main issues regarding Hatha yoga, regarding the cures that they say that they are able to accomplish, is this idea of replanting diseases for the future. And we have a booklet on health that's out there, and it's a wonderful article. Mr. Judge does a couple things on health and spirituality. And he says in The Cure of Diseases, and we'll explain this as we go along, diseases are gross manifestations showing themselves on their way out of the nature so that one may be purified. So if somebody is struggling with physical issues, well, we don't want to say we should be happy about it because we know it's pain, but it is a lesson that is on its last that the physical body is pushing it out. And once it's out, then the next life, the hope is that that issue, that lesson we're learning has been accomplished. So by trying to evoke a cure with Hatha Yoga, he says then, to arrest them through thought, ignorantly directed, is to throw them back into their cause and replant them in their mental plane. Now, the mental plane, it is said, thought, that everything begins and ends in thought, because thought has power. So if karmically we're dealing with something now, that has to do with the way we've been thinking in the past. And if we try and push it back prematurely, the physical issues, it goes back to where it started, back into the mind, back into thought. So then that's where it's going to be waiting for us when we come back. All has origins in the mind. It works the lessons out through the physical. As long as Hatha Yoga is practiced solely for physical issues, like to stretch yourself or something like that, you know, a sore back, that is, you are working a physical issue on the physical plane, as long as one isn't trying to cure it with the mind, because we need to look at and deal with the physicality on that physical plane. Where Hatha Yoga is forcing a development of psychic powers, Raja Yoga is encouraging a gradual development of mental faculties. And they have to be done by the person themselves and not forced by anybody else. Raja Yoga, translated, means royal union, meaning to unite with spirit. It focuses on mind to help raise it closer and more consistently, and that's the idea, is more consistently open to the spiritual nature. And it does this by meditation and contemplation. Again, we're looking at the process of Raja Yoga as seen in Patanjali's yoga aphorisms. And it talks about the direction to help achieve spiritual evolution. He comments on concentration, isolation of the soul. Now, when we talk about isolation of the soul, we're not isolating from other people. Where the soul, he talks about modifications of the mind. Whereas if we're looking at something, if we're watching something, we kind of get all enmeshed into it to the exclusion of other things. The mind needs to be able, the soul needs to be able to focus on the inward experience to the exclusion of all distractions. So when he talks about isolation of the soul, it's so that one can be more involved with spirit. And he also talks about obstacles to meditation. And the idea, again, and it sounds kind of funny that when we talk about isolation of the soul, we're also talking about liberation of it as well, because it's not being distracted by anything. It's liberating itself. And by accomplishing all of this, one is able to know the self within and to know it as a ray of the universal oversoul, and also acknowledging that everybody else is that ray as well. So Raja Yoga helps us with discrimination in all things, to learn to get that wisdom, to make the right choices along the correct path, to increase our intuition, and to have faith that it is true, because some people get a little intuitive sparks and it's like, oh, I don't know about this. But it's important that the intuition be followed so that we know that it can be trusted. So this is how we are looking at our evolution, our spiritual evolution, is by making those correct choices, by, you know, meditating, turning inward so that we're looking at ourselves as even though they're talking about isolation and liberating the soul, we're still all one. So by turning towards that spiritual goal, then all decisions must be made with that motive of universal brotherhood in mind. To evolve, it is necessary to pull our consciousness inward and persistently, to pull from the senses, to gradually elevate the plane of consciousness. And Raja Yoga will help us to accomplish this. And doing, meditating every day, keeping the idea of universal brotherhood in mind in all that we do, this is how we will evolve spiritually. So practically then, this is one thing with our lectures, is that we want to look at how can we put all these high ideals into practice. And with Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga, if Raja Yoga, as we said, can be used just for the physical, the stretches, the bends, that type of thing. But with Raja Yoga, that's when it's an inward bent and to help us along our spiritual evolution. And we did want to read a portion of the last page of Patanjali. This is a general statement, meaning the book, of the nature of isolation, which we went over, sometimes called emancipation. The soul abides in its own nature, unaffected by the great pairs of opposites, which was mentioned in the reading for today. Pleasure and pain, good and evil, cold and heat, etc. Yet it must not be deduced that the philosophy results in a negation or in a coldness, such as our English word isolation would seem to imply. The contrary is the case. Until this state is reached, the soul, continually affected and deflected by objects, senses, suffering, and pleasure, is unable to consciously partake universally of the great life of the universe. To do so, it must stand firmly in its own nature, and then it proceeds further, as is admitted by the philosophy, to bring about the aim of all other souls still struggling on the road. So, already. Yes.
Well, if Hatha Yoga only lasts for one lifetime, but we want to exercise and stretch, and we're not looking, if we're thinking theosophically that we're not trying to gain powers, we just want to exercise our body, is that okay? Is it all right to participate in Hatha Yoga?
Well, it is said that as long as we would not go along with the breathing techniques and all the other spiritual practices, the philosophy says that we, in order to do this work, that we need to have our bodies in shape so that physically we can do what we need to do. We can do our duties. So many yoga stretches and different positions are good for the body, but it's for the body that we need to focus on. And if anything, we would think that depending on the yoga school that you're going to, because we remember years ago, we had gone and all the teacher did were the different positions. And that was it, to help you stretch, to be limber, get rid of some of your aches and pains. See, we can look at the symptoms of disease and, you know, like taking pain medicine, that kind of a thing. So these stretches and the yoga positions can be looked at as being a medicine for a physical issue, as long as one does not do the rest of it. Yes.
Judge also points out where he says that the Hatha yoga develops the psychic nature. And sure, by certain kinds of deep breathing,
mm-hmm.
Basic yoga postures, we may get a sense of freedom from worries. But that psychic feeling of freedom is not the same as actual knowledge
mm-hmm.
and liberation of the mind from ignorance, which is what Raja Yoga tries to achieve. So the psychic, one may feel better, but that's not the same as actually having reached spiritual knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And we think some of that idea of feeling better, we wonder if that's a result of the fact that maybe somebody is feeling better physically. So we don't know if that. Yes.
As in other psychic practices, there is a warning in theosophy about Hatha Yoga because it does affect the psychic nature, and that is, in some senses, it does come back, because if the person, through the practice of certain kind of advanced postures or breathing techniques, develops psychic sensitivity, the physical, mental, and benefits may not come back, because
mm-hmm.
that just deals with the personality. But the tendency to be psychic and sensitive will.
Mm.
And one may find in the next life or succeeding lives none of the benefit of that physical practice, but find themselves overly mediumistic
mm-hmm.
and to mm. tendencies around them are overly psychic and not know where it came from.
Thank you. Yes.
So my mind is drawn to this idea of, you know, chopping off the four lower and the three higher. The Atman, the Buddhi, and what was the other one?
Manus mind.
Manus mind. So that Manus mind is the one part that makes sense, that if that evolves. And that would be where the spiritual evolution takes place. And the Buddhi and the Atman don't, they just are. And I guess tying in the yoga and all this other stuff is ways that you can work on the manas. I'm not quite sure what that is, the mind. I mean, there's a part of me that says, well, that has nothing to do with thought, that just has to do with some other obscure thing. And the thought is basically back in the lower four. Am I completely off base? What is the mind? What is that?
Okay, we want to make sure that there's a distinction between mind and the brain. The brain is physical, and it changes with each life, and the think and where we experience thought is in the brain. Now the mind is, well, it connects the higher triad to the lower quaternary. And with mind, it is where we live. It is the thoughts that we have. It is how we relate to others and to ourselves. So with the way we think, it occurs in manas, but it's experienced in the brain. There is a connection there. So in order for us to evolve, we have to, the Manus is thinking for us. It's like our little conscious. We can go up or down with the conscience, and it is basically the way that we think. If somebody else wants to add to that, in the back.
I think a good expression is, I am a mind being. I am a thinker, and the mind is my connection, both with the higher and the lower. As I use my thinking, so I am moved on this path of evolution, up or down. There is no neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So my ability to think and feel and will all comes from myself as a perceiver, as a thinker. The mind is also an instrument that I use in evolution. So we have to rethink what we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for putting that so succinctly. Yes?
We sometimes tend to want to downplay that lower form,
mm-hmm.
that quaternary. But those principles are absolutely essential, as we know, for contact with contrast on this plane. And it is said that knowledge can only be gotten through contrast. So because we have the opportunity for experience on this plane, the mind then has the opportunity through that learning to turn and recognize that the essential, everlasting part of it is that higher three. So it's pivotal. We talk about the duality. But the more we recognize the I am, the eternal I, in ourselves and everyone
mm-hmm.
else, the more we uplift and help everything around.
Yes, it is necessary. We have to have that connection with this physical plane, because this is where we are learning our lessons, doing our duty, and having the lower four is essential for us to function and to do this. And mind is that connector. And it's, if it functions too much in the passions and desires in Kama, then we're going to run into problems. So the whole idea is to try and function at a higher in the higher aspect towards that spiritual nature. Yes?
Yeah, Edgar Cayce always said that you must subjugate the lower mind before entering any higher spheres of thought. And he said that's exactly what he did before he was able to enter the higher planes,
mm-hmm.
where he drew his information. And as an example of that, this neurosurgeon that just recently was in a coma a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
that he wrote about, his brain function, according to all his colleagues, was completely non-existent. He was in an absolute coma for 7 days. But when he came out of it, he recounted this very lucid story about all these intricacies, including the physical, plane of existence and his relatives and yada yada. And that entire story had to have come not from his brain, because his brain was zero at that point, but it had to come from the higher manas, the higher plane of the mental plane, that he was actually thinking for his brain while his brain was off.
Mm-hmm.
In
regards to Edgar Cayce subjugating, I think theosophy might say transmuting is a nicer term. But mainly it is, that's what we're trying to do, because mind is one principle, and it's functioning in both. So we're trying to transmute it to a higher level. But there are so many experiences that are out in the news. You always hear them very frequently about after-death experiences. And if somebody just wants to comment on that in the back?
The particular experience mentioned, that was, I don't know if he was an MD or a PhD.
I think he was a neuroscientist himself.
It's made quite a challenge for the whole medical community. He wrote a book, and it's being challenged in many different ways, but at least they are thinking about it, and that's where hope can come. If we get enough people thinking about reincarnation and karma, the world will have to change.
Yeah, and we wonder, too, if that was, when we talk about reincarnation and past lives, if some of that coming through was from a past life, we don't know. And I don't know that we'll ever know what that is that comes through. Yes?
Doesn't dementia illustrate that break between the mind and the brain? Isn't that a perfect illustration of that, you know, the difference between the two?
Well, it's interesting because we've even heard that with schizophrenics, the things that, now we don't know if this is, we think we heard it here, that it might be some past life experience coming through, and the person is able to experience that. But we've not heard about dementia being a break, but it certainly sounds logical that it would be. Yes?
Well, whatever illness is manifesting psychologically, mm-hmm. in the lower aspect of the mind, whether it's due to brain disease or some influence of the passions or the psychic nature, the real thinker is not demented,
mm-hmm.
is not schizophrenic, is clear and real, and may not be able to use that instrument of the lower mind as completely as it would. But that in itself is a lesson and a karmic experience.
Yes. If these experiences are being experienced with the lower mind, the thinker is not affected by it, and it very well could be a lesson that this person has to learn. And it's also said that sometimes the soul will come back, will choose to come back in such a body and mind in order to learn something. And also we have to remember that karma is intertwined with other people, so that if somebody comes back, say, or having mental issues, whether it be intellectual or emotional, that family, that person could be born into this family because the family needed to learn different lessons as well. So it's interesting how the everything is intertwined and connected. Yes?
Well, we've heard in this room many times that we are not our bodies. So, could you give us a rundown where we begin to separate these functional aspects so we can get a grasp on who we truly are?
Well, there's that statement that we are not our bodies. When we talk about we, spiritually, if we're talking about the spiritual evolution, we is our higher nature, our higher selves. So in that case, we are not our bodies, but we do associate those senses, the passions and desires, as being part of us. So that's where, when we talked about the isolation of the soul, that is the knowledge, the wisdom that we have to gain, that what we look, when we look in the mirror, we are seeing a physical form, and that's all it is a physical form with that lower quaternary all involved. But as was stated, we're looking, our higher nature is I am I. And that identification will go from the time we're born until the time that we die and onward. So that I am I, when we talk about we are not our body, it is the I that we're talking about, and that is not the form. Yes?
In connection with that, we can say, to make it easier, when our body dies.
Yes. Thank you. Yes?
Another way of saying it is the body, the brain, the senses, the whole physicality, that's my vehicle. I'm the driver. I'm driving this clunker because that's the way I treated substance in the past. The diseases I have, the tendencies I have, it's what I told nature I wanted. It's what I went after. If I want differently, I can treat the vehicle and life around me differently. That is the power of the thinker. But first you have to know you're the thinker, or you just keep following these old patterns.
Yes, well, we need to know that we have those choices that we can make in life to help us to evolve so that... But we have to look at also, we don't want to make changes in our life so that in the next life we're going to have a better body, a better mind, a better life. We need to continually look at our motive and know that universal brotherhood is the reason behind all our choices. In the corner back there?
To carry that thought a little further, if we have this body, this car that we are driving, and it's out of whack and not functioning, then the Hatha Yoga comes in that, we can repair it or make it better so that it's more useful for our higher self to function. Because we need a body that's healthy.
Yes.
Just like we need food. We can't say that, food is only for the physical body. We need food. So we need exercise too.
Yes. Yes. We have to take care of our form in order to fully express our spiritual nature. Yes.
Sorry to keep remaining, but this is just such an important topic for me. I have this idea that the higher mind is the universal mind, and that there's no separate little me in that. This brain is just a radio transmitter. The signals are always coming. The true thoughts are always coming, but they're not an individual thought. They're a universal thought that gets translated in a certain specific way through this brain. So in reality, all these things that I think of are thoughts are really false because my transmitter is not tuned right. And so somehow I have to figure out how to tune the transmitter. And then all of those thoughts are not really my individual thoughts that I'm reaching towards perfections to get to a point where I'm going to be a separate entity in the collective. No, it's just the collective who transmits thoughts. And we all translate them into different ideas.
So, can you bring that down to a specific question then?
Well, it's just that I think that most of the time in these rooms, we're always talking about how reincarnation, that my ideas and my thoughts in this body are going to be able to affect a change in me that will make me perfect. Whereas part of me says, no, we can't do that. That there's nothing that this little me can do. We can't do anything. It's the higher mind that is just acting through us. That's, I don't know. I mean,
the,
I don't know what to say.
The whole idea of Raja Yoga, when we look at evolution, is to train the mind to function openly and welcomingly to the movement of the higher thoughts. And we have, as we said, there is that whole idea of I, with a capital I, that follows us, that we are all the way through. And we know for ourselves that many times we'll look in the mirror and what I am thinking about myself is not what I'm looking at. And there is this I that seems to be separate. And it, in a way, it is, because as we said, we have to isolate the soul so it can function more in that higher nature. In the back?
One of the things we can ask ourselves is, did I ever make a choice that was against everything I was being offered, thinking, wanting, mm-hmm. desiring? If you can ever find a moment when you stood sort of alone and made a choice that was against everything you wanted and desired, you know, maybe everybody was going out to play baseball and you decided to study chemistry and you fought with yourself and you did it. Well, who is that?
Mm-hmm.
That isn't some other mind making choices. That is you. And you can prove that to yourself every day. Make choices against your own desires, which do come and well up in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. You can begin to discover that I am.
And we're looking, that's the whole idea with following your intuition. And we have our consciousness, our conscience rather, you know, they talk about the devil and the angel on the shoulders, and each one is talking. And sometimes you have to use your intuition. You have to let it, you know, you have to let go and jump in and go with the way the your intuition is leading you. It is very hard to identify when there's so many different voices going on in your head. Yes.
Well, the human kingdom is the only one that has the power of choice, according to the philosophy. So you can either accept that or reject that. That's up to you. But the philosophy says that, you know, we are divinity on our return path to divinity. That we are divine. That is our nature. But at this particular juncture, we can make choices that will raise up our mind, and by doing that, we raise up all of great nature,
mm-hmm.
all of the kingdoms, a little bit. And that's our purpose. That's our function. That's why we're here.
Thank you. Yes?
So, was what was just described what Raja Yoga is? Because we see in that the word Rajas, which means active and purposeful and mindful, as opposed to the other qualities. So it is anything we do for the betterment of life, let's just say, Raja Yoga.
Everything. If we're talking about, it's the royal union was the definition to unite with spirit. And the way we do that is the motive always to be to help not only other humans, but all the lower kingdoms as well, to leave as little bit of a footprint on the earth as we can. So we like that. Was it Jesus who said, whatever you do for the
least of them,
you do for me. So that's basically what it is. And we listened to an interview with, what's her name, Miranda Gates yesterday. And they are giving so much money for so many different causes all over the world. And they're, in fact, we heard that the Philadelphia school system was given $1 million by them. And she has the facilities, she has the money to do these great things. Yet, you know, we can't compare ourselves. We don't have the resources to affect that much. But, I mean, even walking down the street, smiling at somebody, you know, the cashiers always look so sad in so many of the stores. And just smiling, you know, and, oh, I'd like your pin or something like that. It's amazing how such little things, I mean, they smile. And, you know, they just like the idea that somebody is noticing them. So it could be just very little things. It's, you know, taking a stray from a shelter. You know, it doesn't matter as long as you're coming out of yourself and doing good and doing your duty as well. We can't forget that, that what comes to you is yours. Yes?
The idea of coming out of yourself brought to mind some 30, 40 years ago when these young men were going into the Navy and didn't know how to swim. And so they put him on a 20-foot tower and said, jump. The man must be out of his mind. And he said, jump. If you didn't jump, you got a push. And when you hit the water, you realize you were still alive. The teachings here tell us to open up our minds. And theosophy will give you means for identifying, repeat, identifying who you truly are. But we have to first leave our old conceptions of what we can and cannot do aside. That is the ocean, with the help of course, those three fundamental ideas. And this way you develop an independent attitude. I can do it. Incidentally, that was a form of recreation.
So we have our choices, we do, and you can choose to jump or you can choose to be pushed, but it's your choice. And some people, when we have spoken about theosophy to friends, family, and whatever, they say, well, it sounds as though your life is planned for you. And it's like, in a way, it's true, because your duty is going to come to you. The lessons are going to come to you. But you always, always have the choice. And that's what we're talking about in today's class, is that you have the choice to choose the right path. Yes?
We live in times when our families and our children can be spread out all over the world, and yet there's a time when they all come home and gather. In the East, the thinker, who we really are as humans, is called the Manasaputra, the sons of universal mind. So it's not that this universal mind is transmitting into our brain, but we are rays, we are sons of that universal parent mind, and our spiritual path as rays of that mind is to return to it. And as we do, we no longer think as individuals, separate entities, but begin to become more wise and universal wisdom.
Yes, and that's where we are focusing with Raja Yoga, is trying to join that universal mind and trying to more consistently focus our thoughts and actions on our intuitions. And we're trying to, we know initially with the secret doctrine, it was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to remember any of this or understand it. And it was told to me that it doesn't matter. It'll make your mind more porous to that movement. And we have time for one more.
Well, we don't have 8 millions or billions, but Jesus also spoke of the widow's mite. If you give a penny and your whole heart is behind it, it's worth a million in the universe. So we can't think of it in terms of scales of values like that. The value is love. Mm-hmm. And the way we address it is through our own spiritual thinking and feeling.
And that's a wonderful way to end our meeting, is the spirit of love. Thank you.